Hello and welcome to the 50th episode of Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me as always is a man who didn't get me anything.
Mike DiCriccio.
How you doing?
I didn't know we were going to do gifts. I'm sorry.
Man, I gave you that nice dinette set, and you and you got me squat.
I mean, you could say my presence is your present.
That's true. Fair point. So well deflected. If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, first we start with some film news, and then we move on into some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately, and then after that, we will move on to our featured review. This week, it is the long-awaited Martin Scorsese religious epic, Silence. Are you ready to dig into Silence, Mike?
I am. I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Yes, I'm curious. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on The Sound of Silence.
Okay, move on.
Yeah, 50 episodes, Mike. 50 episodes of Film Bookcast is pretty exciting. This entire episode will just be long running gags of the show, if we can think of them on the fly.
All three of them.
All three of them. We're gonna start off with the Shrek 5 joke. We're gonna come in hot with a Snyderverse joke, and then we'll make a joke about whatever we're talking about and call it like whatever we're talking about cast. That's
yes, exactly.
Those are our jokes, and we will do them accordingly. Let's get.
And we've already told you what they'll be.
All right, let's get into some film news. Hi, it's time for what? It's time for what? It's time for film news. Hi, it's time for what? It's time for what? It's time for film news. Film news. All right, it's time for some film news here on the Film Bookcast. We're talking about some of the big stories over the past few weeks. It's been a pretty quiet couple of weeks over the past few weeks because of the holiday season stuff. But now that's, right. You know, we're into January. We're in the early days of Janny Doggy.
You can't just make up things like, you can't just make it a thing.
I'll try anyway. there are a couple of things that have been trickling out. And one of the big, I said trickling out, and it made me think of the Donald Trump sex tape. That is news that has been trickling out the past few weeks. That's not it what has. We're talking about. But in the world of film and television, and that doesn't count as a film, that counts as
God damn it.
Something entirely different. There are some other big developments happening. The Coen brothers, one of our favorite directing teams one of mine of all time, I would say, one of my favorite directors ever, the Coens, are writing and directing an anthology Western TV series called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Like, just all of those words together.
Isn't that just a phenomenal sentence to hear?
Yeah. But it's also the most Coen Brothers thing I've ever heard.
Exactly. It's so cool. And we don't really know much about this show, but what's exciting about this is that the Coens have never worked in TV before, and that's a very exciting prospect. I'm excited to see what they can do with the medium. We already have the best Coen Brothers imitation on TV right now with Fargo.
Right. Right.
That's as Coensy as you can get without the Coen Brothers actually being involved. And they are producers on that show. But they don't. Okay. They don't like do anything. Like they don't.
they just throw money at it.
They're pretty much just like, yeah, you can use the name Fargo. It's fine. And and they let them, you know, reference all their movies and stuff. And that's, I love Fargo. That show is like fantastic. It's a great show. But imagine if like the real Coen brothers are working on a TV show. Imagine the possibilities, Mike.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to be. An anthology Western TV show.
Yeah, so does that mean like it'll be a different kind of Western each season? Does it mean each episode? I doubt the Coen brothers would tie themselves down to like a multi-season TV show.
Right.
So I could see them like doing this for like one season, like it's a mini-series almost, but every episode is a different kind of Western story. But then who's Buster Scruggs? Is he in all the stories? Like I
kind of hope it's just a Buster Scruggs is the main character, but it's a different actor every time. Like, really fun.
That'd be really interesting. I could see like a sort of a Mad Max scenario where Buster Scruggs is like the one constant in the show, and like every episode is just him going to like a different town and like doing something ridiculous and silly. But anyway, that's The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Definitely have to keep an eye on that moving forward because Coen brothers are always worth checking out no matter what they're doing.
Yeah.
So that is very exciting. And here's another exciting thing that's happening in the world of movies. Woody Harrelson, star of Cheers, has joined the has joined the cast of the young Han Solo movie in a role that will likely be as Han Solo's outlaw mentor. Can you imagine watching Cheers and think, and like back in the 80s and 90s, and saying to yourself, that dim-witted bartender is going to be in every major blockbuster franchise?
But like, for real though. It's insane.
It turns out white man can jump.
Wow.
But the cast of this young Han Solo movie just keeps getting better and better. I'm very excited about this. And I love Woody Harrelson. I was thinking, though, that this, like, he's playing Han Solo's mentor. And I feel like, just in terms of, like, the way Harrelson is, like, his acting persona, this might be a little too similar to Michael Rooker's character Yondu from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I didn't think of that.
But I'm sure, like, they'll put their own spin on it or whatever. It's just that is, like, a slight concern of mine. But we'll see what happens. You know, that's like, now we've got Alden Ehrenreich as Han Solo. We've got Donald Glover as Lando, which is like a casting coup that is incredible. And now you've got Woody Harrelson as some kind of mentor figure to Han Solo. Plus Phil Lord and Chris Miller are making the movie, and it's written by Lawrence Kasdan and John Kasdan. Like, this movie has everything going for it except for its basic premise.
Yeah. Everything around it is perfect.
Yeah. So that is it's looking better and better. I'm very excited about this young Han Solo movie. And actually, now that we're talking about Star Wars, might as well bring it up. Lucasfilm has officially confirmed that they will not do a CGI version of Carrie Fisher in episode 8 or 9. Like, it's just not gonna happen.
Yes, I did hear that. Is good.
I think. That's good. That's good. There will not be any CGI Carrie Fisher except for the one that already exists.
Right. Yeah.
Which is a very different situation, in any case. But so that's very good. I'm excited that there's not. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle Princess Leia going forward in the movies in episode 8 and right. 9. Because apparently she was supposed to have a much bigger role in those movies than she was going to have in episode 7. Like, she kind of shows up, what, like an hour and a half into episode 7? Like, pretty late into the movie. And so 8 and 9 was going to have her in an expanded role. It was going to have to, like, explore her relationship with Kylo Ren, who's her son, obviously. And so it'll be interesting to see how Lucasfilm handles having to deal with Carrie Fisher's death. You know, it's supposedly, like, she's... like, all of her stuff for episode 8 was shot. Like, she's...
Right.
That stuff's in the can, so I'm thinking they might take some of that and move it to episode 9 or do other stuff. They have other deleted scenes from episode 7 as well they could do as well. I think probably their best route is to kind of open episode 9 with Princess Leia's funeral. Like, just have her die in between movies, and, like, not even of, like, any kind of act of rebellion or something, just, like, maybe of old age. I don't know. It's not a great situation for them to be in, storytelling-wise. It's something they're going to have to deal with, and so it'll be interesting to see how they deal with it. So it's not, like, at least with, like, when Paul Walker died during Fury 7, he had shot enough of the movie where they can kind of fill out the rest with stand-ins and CGI and stuff like that.
Right.
In this case, she was supposed to do 2 movies, and she shot one of them and was not able to shoot the next one.
Yeah, it would be pretty hard to stretch 1 movie's worth of scenes into 2. And at least this, you know, people did... I saw a lot of comparisons to Paul Walker when people were upset about Peter Cushing, but at least the stand-in for Paul Walker was his twin brother, or his brother.
Yeah, one of his brothers, yeah. And again, the stand-in was, you know, you never really saw his face, you know?
Right.
And when you watch Fury 7, I really don't think you can tell when there's any, like, special additions to Paul Walker, except for the very end when they're doing the Paul Walker tribute, and you see his face in the car. And so throughout the movie, I think, like, Paul Walker is pretty... Like, it's hard to spot any kind of CGI or stand-in kind of stuff. Whereas Peter Cushing in Rogue One, it's entirely a CGI creation. So it's very different. And that is very weird. But anyway, let's get off Star Wars for a little bit and move on to some other...
No, Mike, we're never allowed to get off Star Wars.
Okay, I can use Star Wars to segue into the thing I'm about to talk about next.
Oh, Captain Segway, go ahead.
Did you know that in the 80s, David Lynch was offered to direct Return of the Jedi?
I did not know that.
Yeah, well, David Lynch was given the chance to direct Return of the Jedi and ended up turning it down so that he can work on another sci-fi movie, and that movie was 1984's Dune.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, now that we're talking about Dune, it looks like Denis Villeneuve, who directed Arrival and Sicario, will probably be directing a new adaptation of Dune.
Yes, that's amazing.
talk about... Are you talking about... the news or about my segue? Because I'm pretty proud of that segue.
That was a pretty phenomenal segue. Well done,
thank
Mike.
Thank you. So the 1984 movie directed by David Lynch is pretty divisive. You know, there are some hardcore Lynch fans who love that movie, and the rest of the Lynch fans really don't. And people who love the book are not a fan of that movie either. And so Villeneuve has proven that he's one of the most exciting directors working today. Like, Arrival is just some phenomenal sci-fi. Sicario was really great. And, I mean, you're obviously a big fan of his through both those movies, Sicario and Arrival. You picked Arrival as your number one movie of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm excited that he's going to be tackling – oh, man, I lost it. It just left my brain. Blade Runner, right? He's doing the new Blade Runner.
Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, that was close, Mike. So, I mean, let's just give him all the sci-fi at this point. Like, I'm in.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I don't know if you saw Togetherness season 2. Did you see season 2 of Togetherness?
No, I did not.
Did you watch the first season?
I watched most of it. I don't think I ever got around to finishing it.
Okay, but... well, season 2 of Togetherness, there's a subplot in that show where Mark Duplass and Steve Sissis' characters are doing, like, their own homemade play version of Dune. And it's like a season-long thing. And so I'm hoping that it's an adaptation of that.
That's definitely what it is. Yep.
It'll be the Mumblecore Dune that we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, can't wait.
So that's very exciting. And that is our film news for today. Just wanted to throw out a couple of things there. And let's get into our discussion.
Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions.
All right, let's get into our discussions on the new episode of Film Bookcast. Mike, what do you have to discuss with us today?
Today, I'm going to discuss 13th, which is a documentary directed by Ava DuVernay, who directed Selma few years ago. 13th came out on Netflix in the middle of last year in 2016. And it is a documentary about primarily race in the U.S. and the 13th Amendment, which is the amendment that abolishes slavery. However, there's a clause in there that says, except in the case of punishment for crime. So you can be sentenced to slavery, Mike.
What? Wait, really?
Yeah, I don't have the exact language of the 13th Amendment, but it says the institution did something along the lines of slavery is abolished in the United States, except in the case of punishment as a crime. So it is the history, the documentary is the history about the criminalization of blackness in the U.S., how... we freed the slaves, and the 13th Amendment's passed, and then they immediately became criminals. And it traces the history between slavery, then Jim Crow South, and how segregation, and then we get the Civil Rights era, and you know the Voting Rights Act is passed. Finally, we have equal voting rights. A few years later, Richard Nixon starts his war on crime, and the era of mass incrimination starts, and how the U.S. has the fifth... What is it? 5% of the U.S. of the world's population and 25% of the world's incarceration. So it's about the history and the institution of prisons and racism and how it's so central to our identity as a country.
Right.
So it's really super poignant, especially you know everything that's going on. We always talk about how we have an imminent Nazi person being in the prison, in the White House soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so get educated, watch this documentary, expand your horizons.
Yeah,
and it's really powerful, it's intense.
Yeah, I had heard really good things about this documentary, and I knew it was directed by Ava DuVernay. I really didn't know about the subject matter, though. I knew it had something to do with race. I had no idea about the all-encompassing nature of that kind of argument. So that sounds really fascinating, and I'm getting angry just thinking about it. So
it's definitely one of those... Sit down. It's like an hour and 40 minutes. By the end, you will be seething rage. and it's got – and actually, there's a lot of people in it. It encompasses a lot of viewpoints. Grover Norquist and Newt Gingrich are included as people that are interviewed.
Okay.
So it does attempt to see the other side in things. And it's super interesting.
Okay.
People
very cool.
Definitely check it out.
So that's the 13th or just 13th?
What is it? 13th, yeah.
13th. It's a Netflix original documentary. So it's available on all of your laptops. and then I have a few discussions for today, actually. I wanted to talk about Twin Peaks Firewalk with Me and the rest of Twin Peaks because we've talked about Twin Peaks quite a bit over the past few months because I've been watching it. Right. And so it's just been on my mind a lot. And so I talked about it when I first started watching it, like the first couple episodes or something. And then I haven't really like talked about it in my discussion since then. And now I've watched the entire series, and I've watched the movie Firewalk With Me, and I've read the book The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer, and I'm about to read The Secret History of Twin Peaks, the book.
Oh, God. I'm so excited by how just deep in Twin Peaks you are.
And so, obviously, here's the thing about Twin Peaks Firewalk With Me. Have you watched it yet?
No, I haven't watched the entire thing yet.
You got to watch it. Partly because I think season three, they've confirmed that it's going to deal with Firewalk With Me a lot. Like it's going to be a significant part of it. But David Lynch had the opportunity to wrap up all the lingering threads of Twin Peaks with a movie a year after the show was canceled and ended with a lot of cliffhangers. And instead he said, no, I'm not going to answer anything in this movie. I'm going to make it a prequel.
Right. I'm going to ask more questions.
Exactly. And I love the audacity of that choice, because Twin Peaks is not about the answers to these questions. It's about the atmosphere and the mystery and like the kind of knowing, unknowing nature of this town. And Firewalk With Me is not exactly what I was expecting it to be. It's very different from the show, but it's great in its own way. It's very separate. The majority of the film is laser focused on just the last few days of Laura Palmer's life, which is really fascinating because you don't you never see her alive in the show. And so like Cheryl Lee is on the show as a corpse at first, and she shows up as the character's cousin Maddie later on, and like she shows up in like visions as Laura every once in a while, but this is the only time we've ever seen her like alive, and that's really interesting to watch. And it's a pretty terrific psychological thriller that feels very much of a piece with The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer. I'm pretty glad I read that book actually as I was watching Twin Peaks season two, because Firewalk With Me feels more akin to that book as opposed to the show. I'm hearing that the new season is going to call back to Firewalk With Me pretty heavily, and I'm fighting the urge just to rewatch everything.
I kind of really want to do that.
Right? Over again, just before it starts. May 21st, man! They announced the date!
Yeah. So we finally know when that gum you like will come back in style.
Yeah, it's coming back May 21st, which is very, very, very exciting. This is the TV event of the year, like I think.
I would say so.
It's not even a question. Like, there's other shows that I'm really very much looking forward to, that I'm very excited about. You know, there's going to be Better Call Saul, and The Leftovers final season's coming out, and Fargo will be back, and all this kind of cool stuff. But man, Twin Peaks. David Lynch writing and directing, or at least directing, every episode of a new season of Twin Peaks. I believe it's like 18 episodes, too. It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's 2-hour premiere, two episodes back to back.
Yes,
and then 16 more episodes. Like that's insane.
Yeah, apparently, actually, what I heard is that that after that 2-hour premiere, those first 2 hours will be back to back, and then they're going to make episodes 3 and 4 available online immediately afterwards.
Oh my god! Yes,
and so I don't know how I'll end up watching it. I don't know, man, because I want to watch it week to week, and I want to like savor it, you know. But at the same time, if I know there are episodes out there that I can just watch,
I'm probably just going to watch them.
I don't know what I'm going to do. So it's going to be a really interesting couple of months up until Twin Peaks comes out. And then it'll be going on, I guess, all summer, pretty much. May through through 16 plus weeks or whatever.
Right. I'm interested, too, because I think the way you put that was really good, that Twin Peaks is about the questions. It's not about the answers.
Yeah.
So, and you could even argue that the show becomes its worst once it answers the main main question.
Obviously, halfway through season two, they answer who kills Laura Palmer, and it's so exciting when they do. It's like intense and crazy and insane. And then after that, I don't think the show got bad. A lot of people do. A lot of people do think that, but it's definitely different. And it definitely feels like very wheels, like there's wheel spinning, and like there's not good stuff in there. There's more good stuff, I think, than there is bad stuff, but there is some lousy stuff in there, but there's a lot of fun stuff. But if you stick through it, the finale of season two is incredible. Like, it's insane. It's
like one of the craziest things that ever happened on TV, I think. Like, I don't know. Like,
exactly. Just,
I was flipping past Showtime earlier this week, and they were marathoning all of season one of Twin Peaks. And I just happened to land on the episode the first time that we see the Black Lodge. Oh. And, like, I can't believe that thing happened. Like, that happened on network TV in primetime. Like, ridiculous.
And it was a hit, too, for a little while. Like, people were into the show. And I think people were into the show because of the murder mystery and not so much because of the weird stuff. So, because once, like people started abandoning the show once it became pretty clear that the show had no intention of solving the mystery.
Right.
So once they solved the mystery, people left the show, like even more people left the show because they were like, well, I know the answer to the mystery now. Exactly. So, it was such a huge hit for like such a short amount of time. And then the show kind of fizzled out. And then for some reason it got a movie. Like, I don't know how it ended up getting a movie after it like had fizzled out so much after that, up to that point.
I don't know. I think it's just the raw power of David Lynch.
It might be. But it's sort of like how Firefly got a movie. It got Serenity, even though Firefly was such a low rated show. And it was canceled after 14 episodes or something. But like fan reaction to those episodes was so strong, and like people were like crusading like more Firefly, that like Fox saw like the fans and was like, hey, you know, there's actually an audience for this. Let's make a movie or something. And Joss Whedon did it, and then the movie bombed.
Nailed it. Crushed it so hard.
And that's the thing with these internet fan bases, that they're never as big as they sound.
Right, you know? Exactly.
But that said, Twin Peaks has had 25 years to build an audience, and I think it has such esteem now in the critical community, and like people are so excited about the show. So I think it's good. I think it is going to be a pretty big hit for Showtime. It's definitely the most talked about show. What was the last time people were talking about a Showtime show? Like Homeland?
I think Homeland and The Affair, I think, are their two big shows.
The Affair is like a decently big show. It's not like a huge hit, I don't think.
I mean, I don't know. That's just the only one I've ever heard of besides Homeland.
But like Homeland season one was big, but then after that people have been like, you know, Homeland's not good anymore. It's not like, you know,
right.
Showtime has a habit of renewing their shows way past their natural end date. And that was I think the last time I heard somebody talking about a Showtime show was when Dexter ended and it pissed everybody off.
Oh, shit, I forgot about Dexter. Yeah, you're right.
So that was a couple years ago. So anyway, Twin Peaks, man. So excited for season three. David Lynch.
Stay tuned for a Twin Peaks cast.
Yeah, I think in all likelihood, I think we will probably end up doing some kind of Twin Peaks podcast when that show comes back. And it's going to be a very exciting time in the world of podcasting. Because there won't be any other Twin Peaks podcast. We will be the only one.
Yeah, we'll be the only one.
Such a novel idea. Anyway, let's get off Twin Peaks for a minute. I know we can talk about that all day. I also wanted to talk about a movie I watched last night called Don't Think Twice, which is the new movie directed by comedian Mike Birbiglia, who also directed a movie called Sleepwalk With Me a few years ago. And I love Sleepwalk With Me. I think that movie's great. And I love Mike Birbiglia, too. I think his stand-up is really, really strong. Don't Think Twice stars Keegan-Michael Key, Gillian Jacobs, Mike Birbiglia, Chris Gethard, Kate Micucci, and Tammy Sager. And it's about what happens to an improv group when one of them makes it big getting cast on Weekend Live, which is the show stand-in for like a Saturday Night Live type show, like the biggest sketch comedy show in the world, basically. And so I think Mike Birbiglia is really good at creating comedy with emotional resonance, and he really effectively showcases how soul-crushing it is. When you put your whole life into something and you see someone you know achieve the success that you've been after.
Right.
And so I don't think I liked it as much as Sleepwalk With Me, but that movie hit me in a very specific way. It's such a weird time in my life that it had such a great impact on me. This one kind of proves that Birbiglia can work outside of his stand-up, because this is – like Sleepwalk With Me was based on one of his shows, like one of his sets that he did.
Right.
And this is kind of like an original script, an original idea. And so that's – it's really good. It's really strong. And I'm very excited for more Mike Birbiglia stuff. I hope he keeps making more movies. Also, weird side note about Don't Think Twice. This movie was filmed in August 2015, and there is a bit very early on in which they're like all of the improv group is riffing doing Donald Trump impressions.
Oh, no.
But here's the thing, and all they're doing is just like variations of "You're Fired" over and over again, because it was August 2015. Like, how insane is that? that a year ago that catchphrase was the first thing people thought of when they thought of Donald Trump.
I can't even
it's insane. It was a very surreal feeling watching that scene in the movie. But anyway, that is a Don't Think Twice. Really, really great. Especially if you've like been a performer at some point in your life, I think it like nails that kind of feeling very well. And then I also wanted to briefly mention the Sense8 Christmas special, which I feel like I've been like mentioning a bunch of ridiculous stuff over my discussions, but Sense8 Christmas special. I don't know if I've talked about Sense8 on the show before or not.
I think you did. I don't remember.
I may have, but it was a while ago. The show...
It's been 50 episodes. So.
It has been 50 episodes. Season one of the show premiered in June 2015. And so that was like we were probably on episode like 8 or 9 at that point. Like that was that was a long time ago. But this is the Netflix original series created by the Wachowskis and J. Michael Straczynski, who is the creator of Babylon 5. Season 1 came out in June of 2015. Season 2 is coming out in May. And this is a show that is bold and bizarre, and it's like nothing else that has ever existed. actually, fun connection between my discussions. The opening credits of Sensei are like this like very quick-moving montage through like the entire world. Basically, you're seeing people of different like races and different colors and different creeds and all this kind of stuff. And then at one point in the montage, you just see a sign that says Twin Peaks. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Which I think Twin Peaks is a pretty heavy influence on Sense8 in terms of like how bizarre that this show is willing to get. It's very similar to the Wachowskis' movie Cloud Atlas, which I love, and I think is one of the best movies of the decade. But this show is all in the present day, and it details the lives of these 8 people who are psychically linked and can feel what the others feel and do what the others do, and it's totally insane, and it doesn't always work, but when it does, it is among the best TV that has ever existed. I feel so enriched watching Sense8. And they released a Christmas special in December, and I guess it was made as part of the second season. So it kind of works as like a bridge between season 1 and season 2. It's weird because it's like a serialized drama, so it has to kind of continue the story. But at the same time, it kind of has to work as like a standalone thing because it's a Christmas special. and also, Christmas doesn't show up until the last half hour, and it's a 2-hour it's a 2-hour thing. the actual special takes place over the course of like 6 months, and this special doubles down on everything that Sensei has done up to this point. Results in one of the most unique viewing experiences I had this year, and not only that, but after the election, I think the show feels even more important because its message is so much about empathy and inclusiveness and its diversity. And it's also just one of the best looking shows. And if you watch it and have any background in editing, you will marvel at the insanity and how difficult this must be to put together, even just from a logistic, like how are we filming this standpoint? Because there are so many like very quick montages that will last up to like 10 minutes and, you know, dealing with all these different characters, and every single one of these characters will be in every single one of these different locations. There's this one montage where they're all like celebrating this one character's birthday, and there's like this huge rave sequence that puts the rave sequence from Matrix Reloaded to shame. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's insane. And they also have this one sequence where they're all just having sex with each other, which they did earlier in season 1 as well. And it's, you know, just insane and beautiful and like crazy to watch. And like, my mom walked in the room at the wrong time. And
always, every time.
Every single time. Anyway, Sense8 is a phenomenal show, especially if you love like really insane like sci-fi kind of nonsense concepts. Like the I think it takes a few episodes to really like kind of feel out its rhythms. But once you feel it out and once you get into it, I say episode 4 of the show ends on one of the most beautiful sequences I've ever seen in any TV show. And then it keeps building on that from there. It's a really strong show. So definitely check out Sense8. The Christmas special is very good, and the entire first season and the Christmas special are available on Netflix. It's one of those shows. I feel like Netflix, their greatest strength, I've said this before, is that they make so many different shows. They can basically cater to every niche,
right?
In the world, like Sense8 feels like a show that was made just for me. You know, right. And BoJack Horseman feels like a show that was made specifically with me in mind. And, you know,
if you can't find a Netflix show for you, you don't have like emotions. Like,
Exactly. So that's the Sense8 Christmas special and all of other discussions. Sense8's available on Netflix. Mike, let's get into our review. Let's get into our featured review of Martin Scorsese's Silence.
Ferrera is lost to us. He denounced God in public and surrendered the faith.
That's not possible. Father Ferreira risked his life to spread our faith all over Japan.
It seems to me that our mission here is more urgent than ever. We must go find Father Ferreira.
This is in your hearts, then, both of you?
Yes.
Then I must trust God has put it down. The moment you set foot in that country, you step into high danger.
All right, that was from the trailer for Silence, which is the new movie directed by Martin Scorsese, written by Martin Scorsese and Jay Cox, who is also the writer of other Martin Scorsese movies like The Age of Innocence and Gangs of New York. And this movie stars Andrew Garfield, Adam Driver, Liam Neeson, Tadanobu Asano, Kieran Hines, Issei Ogata, Shinya Tsukamoto, Yoshi Oida, and Yosuke Kubuzaka. Zuka. I almost made it through all of those without messing up.
You were so close.
Almost. So close.
Last syllable.
The last one. And the IMDb plot synopsis of Silence reads, two priests travel to Japan in an attempt to locate their mentor and propagate Catholicism. That is all IMDb says. Which if you see, wow. Which you've seen the movie, that is the most bare bones plot synopsis.
That, yeah. Wow. Somebody watched the first 10 minutes of the movie and wrote that plot synopsis.
Pretty much, yeah. So Martin Scorsese has been developing Silence for close to 30 years, Mike. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. This is a very long gestating project. It's been a passion project of his for a long time. This was originally a novel released in 1966 by Shusaku Endo, and it was also made into a movie in 1971 by Japanese director Masahiro Shinoda. So there's that as well. There's a little history there. And Scorsese has talked about making Silence for so long. Like, since 1990, I think, is when as far back as this movie goes into development. And there's this quote on the movie's Wikipedia page from Scorsese about why he was so enthralled with Silence and why he's been like pushing to make this movie for so long. And his quote goes like this. As you get older, ideas go and come, questions, answers, loss of the answer again, and more questions. And this is what really interests me. The very nature of secularism right now is really fascinating to me. But at the same time, do you wipe away what could be more enriching in your life, which is an appreciation or some sort of search for what is spiritual and transcends? Silence is just something that I'm drawn to in that way. It's been an obsession. It has to be done. It's a strong, wonderful, true story, a thriller in a way, but it deals with those questions. And so that is about right. I feel like before we get into the movie, I think the best way to sum it up is that when it ended, my entire theater was completely silent, except for one guy who just said, wow.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mike, what was your reaction coming out of Silence? Like, what did you think of the movie going in? Did you have any idea what to expect going into the movie?
I knew going in supposedly it took a very long time for them to get a cut under 3 hours.
right.
From what I remember hearing. And I knew going in it was going to be a religious epic, it definitely feels like that. But coming out of the theater, I felt I can't describe exactly how I felt, because it's what it, like, it just hits you with a punch and is like, go ahead, think about that for a while.
Yeah.
that's kind of how I just felt. I felt like it. I wish they had worked a little harder to make it shorter. I definitely had some issues, but I think I know why it ends up being 2 hours and 45 minutes, why it ends up being so long.
Right.
In an effort to reflect the pains of and the waiting and the struggles of what's going on with the characters.
Yes.
That said, I was all the way on board up till the middle of the second act, I think. And then I feel like we just kind of hang out for a while and then we get a third act.
Fair enough. I do think it's incredible that Silence was made. This is such a unique kind of movie. And I think we're so lucky that we had a master filmmaker like Scorsese, who's still making movies that feel very vital to the cultural discussion. It seems like every time Scorsese comes out with a movie, it's always a big deal. And he comes out with one relatively frequently. Like, it's been 3 years since The Wolf of Wall Street, which was another movie that I feel like is so vital to the cultural discussion and so much about today's world. And that movie, I think, is one of the best of the decade. That movie is incredible. Silence, I think, as expected, is gorgeously shot.
Yes.
And it contains terrific performances, and it's a pretty nuanced examination of faith and what drives men in their beliefs. There are so many sequences in this movie that are so hard to watch. and with the running time of 2 hours and 40 minutes, and an incredibly bleak worldview, it is tough to tell people that they should see this movie.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, it's not like I would tell people I saw Silence, and I was like, oh, how was it? And I was like, oh, it's really great. And they were like, oh, so I should go see it. And I was like, probably not. Like, I don't know. Because you're going to hate me if I tell you to go see it. So.
Yep. I've definitely run into that already.
Yeah. It is a harrowing emotional experience. And one that at times does feel like too much, But I'm very glad it exists, and I feel like I'm sort of with you on the runtime, but at the same time, you're right. It feels like, you know, we're with that character through all of the suffering and torment that he's going through,
right.
And it really makes you feel the struggle. And I feel like, you know, the lengthy running time just adds to that almost. Like, I'm not saying it's like torture to watch a 2-hour and 40-minute movie,
right?
And in no way is that comparable to what this character goes through.
No, but we do languish for a good half hour.
Yeah, and you're kind of,
that's
and,
about all that's
and
going
you're,
on.
You're kind of watching this character slowly lose his faith, and that makes you slowly lose your own kind of like mentalities almost. Like you're like shutting down almost, and it's like it's an exhausting experience watching Silence. It is intense, and I really enjoyed the movie. I mean, enjoy is a strong word. It's a different kind of enjoyment than it's a different kind of enjoyment than if I'm enjoying XXX or something. You know, I'll throw that out there because I watched XXX the other day and it was awesome. But but it's a different kind of enjoyment than that kind of thing. But it feels like I really admired and liked the movie a lot, but I don't think I'll be watching it again anytime soon. I think I would like to watch it again at some point.
It's definitely one of those movies that I, like you said, it's, you don't want to say you struggle to sit through it, but it is kind of a struggle.
I think the movie like is intentionally making it like a struggle almost. And so that's part of what's going on there. So it's tough. It's kind of a tough movie. It's a tough movie to watch. There's a lot of sequences in this movie that are just so brutal, and so debilitating, and make you like the entire arc of this movie, I guess you could say, is that you're watching a person slowly lose their faith. Like it's such a disheartening thing to see, you know. And the movie does it so methodically and so slowly and so like bit by bit, and
it's so earnest about what it's doing.
And so there's a lot I want to talk about with Silence, and I think I feel like a lot of it has to do with spoilers. So I don't know if you want to move into spoilers, if you have any other last-minute thoughts before we do that.
Well, I guess we could talk about Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver and Liam Neeson before we head into spoilers.
Oh, sure, their performances and stuff.
Yeah, well, what did you think of their accents?
I thought they were fine. Their accents were fine. I had no problem.
They were good enough, I guess.
I had no problem with their accents. I mean, I think the only one who I felt I could notice the accent was Adam Driver.
He's laid it on pretty thick.
He's laying it on a little thick. But only in the beginning. I feel like only really in the beginning. As the movie goes on, I feel like you kind of get used to
it. You get used to it. I just thought it was, like, very funny. I was not expecting that. I guess I should have been.
They're supposed to be from Portugal.
Right.
Right.
They're supposed to be from Portugal. We've got Liam Neeson with his normal voice.
Very much. Not even trying. Although I gotta say, Liam Neeson was very good in this movie, and I was watching it and thinking, like, how long has it been since we've seen Liam Neeson in like a real drama? You know?
Yeah, that's right.
I've been watching him punching dudes for like 10 years. It feels
right.
Like.
That's a good point. Yeah, I haven't thought of that.
It is
interesting that I don't mean to cut you off.
No, you go.
That he's kind of, I guess he's the most, he gets, the, you know, he's the star, he gets top billing, but really he's not.
did he get top billing in the movie?
Or at least in terms of marketing, he's being pushed
He's only he's in like the first 5 minutes and then he's in like the last half hour. He's not really in that much of the movie. Andrew Garfield is really the center of this movie. And I think it's probably his best performance of what I've seen of his anyway. Same with him. It's kind of nice to have him back in real movies after doing Spider-Man for a couple of years.
Right.
Cause for that period of time, he was in The Social Network, right, in 2010. And he was so good in The Social Network. I was like so excited to see where he'd go from there. And then he got cast as Spider-Man and I was really excited to see what he would do as Spider-Man. I think he did a good job as Spider-Man. I think he was miscast, but he did a good job. And he did those two movies, but he didn't make any other movies from 2010 to 2014, except for Spider-Man movies. And so, I felt like I was being robbed of a lot of good Andrew Garfield performances almost. I know I'm not entitled to good Andrew Garfield performances. Like, it's entirely on his call if he wants to give me those performances. But, I feel like there was so much more interesting stuff he could be doing. In the service of these kind of lame Spider-Man movies that he was making. this year he kind of came back with Hacksaw Ridge and with this movie Silence. Like it's cool to see him doing some real acting again. And even then in like Hacksaw Ridge, I remember thinking like, I like Hacksaw Ridge, but like it's so hokey and
it really is.
especially in that first half, and like it's like almost to the point where it's like it's a joke. Like like there are scenes in that movie where I'm like, this came out of like a Hallmark commercial or something. Like it's
right.
And I think Andrew Garfield's performance in those scenes reflects that. This movie, he's really like all in. He's like it feels much more serious and it's much more grounded. I think he gives a lot of nuance to his character, which is really strong. And Adam Driver is good too. He's also very good. I feel like he doesn't get as much to do as Andrew Garfield,
right?
In this movie, but it's really not about Adam Driver in any case. Like it's more about Andrew Garfield's journey and what he's going through. But yeah, they were all very good, and all the other actors, the Japanese actors as well. And I apologize for not being able to like name all of them. There's a lot of names thrown at me at once of people who I've never seen, like who I generally haven't seen in other movies before. So it's kind of tough on that regard. But I will say the guy who plays the Inquisitor is excellent. And there are so, and the guy who plays the inspector, the like head guard of the camp that Andrew Garfield is at, is also excellent. Like, I think everybody in this movie is really, really strong. And I especially really like Kichichiro, who I'll talk about in spoilers, but poor Kichichiro, man.
Man. Just tough breaks.
Tough breaks for Kichichiro. But in any case, Silence is a really tough watch. It's a really difficult movie to watch, but I think it's well worth it. I think it's very much worth your time if you can handle this kind of thing. I think if you're at any point in your life, you've been a person of faith, and I'm not the most religious person in the world, but if at any point in your life you've been a person of faith, I think this movie will speak to you in some way. In what way that is, you know, who knows? Depends on what side you're on, I guess. But I think it will speak to a lot of people if they would actually sit down and see it. I don't think this movie will do well.
I'm not so positive about that. I think it's probably going to get a lot of attention awards wise. I think
it will get some, but I think it's I don't know. I feel like this season it's going to get it's down to like La La Land and Moonlight are like the two big ones.
Yeah, that's true.
I think Silence will get some, but I mean even like the Producers Guild Awards. The Producers Guild announced their 10 nominees for the 10 best movies of the year, which are usually a pretty good indication of what the Oscars will also go with, most of the case. And they did not name Silence. They did name Deadpool.
God damn it. Okay.
I got to tell you, I will be furious if Silence does not get a Best Picture nomination, but Deadpool does.
But Deadpool does? That'd be amazing.
I mean, I think we've talked about this before. I love that a movie like Deadpool can get awards consideration. I really dislike that movie is Deadpool, but
yeah.
But that's a little off topic. Anyway, Silence is very good. I highly recommend it, especially if you're a Scorsese fan. I think this is the movie that he's been trying to make for a very long time, and it's well worth checking out. But let's get into spoilers for Silence, starting right now. Okay, spoilers for Silence, starting right now. I gotta say, man, poor Kichichiro. You know,
yeah.
Fool me once, shame on you. fool me twice, shame on me, and fool me every single step of the way, then I have no idea.
I don't know what to even make of that. Yeah. It's pretty weird. Pretty weird.
But I actually really enjoyed that character. I think he presented a really interesting foil for Andrew Garfield's character. He's this guy who is consistently screwing up like in every sense of the word, and is always selling out his faith and always selling out his people in order to survive. And, you know, Garfield's kind of ideology is shifting throughout the movie. And his relationship with Kichichiro also kind of shifts throughout the movie. And so, you know, throughout the movie, he's like giving Kichichiro forgiveness for all of his sins. But he's finding it harder and harder to do that as the movie goes on. And then at the end, he just refuses, and Kichichiro disappears.
Yeah.
And it's like very scary, and it's very creepy, and made me very sad. This movie made me very sad in a lot of, in general, like for the 2 hours, 40 minutes. I wanted to say the clash in ideologies between Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver, I think, is one of the best parts about this movie in its early going. I think Garfield, like, there's a clash where Garfield says it's okay to renounce God, to apostatize, if it will save lives. Right. And then Driver is very adamant that it's not okay to do that. It's not even acceptable. And so there's this kind of clash between those two characters, which I found really interesting. And then even Garfield was saying that to people, like, it's okay, you can do it, you can do it. And usually they didn't. But he's saying it's okay, you can do it. But even then, when it comes time for Garfield, like when they capture Andrew Garfield and they say, okay, you should apostatize, He won't do it, even though it will save lives if he does it for a very long time.
Yeah, that's the section of the film that took that felt like it took the longest. But it, like we said, it is to mirror what that character is going through. He's languishing in prison for I don't even know what the timeline is. Seemingly months, probably longer, where he's being forced to watch all these people go through these torments because he refuses to renounce God. And it's powerful. It's some shit. He's going through some shit.
Yeah. I think that should have been in the IMDb plot synopsis for this movie. He's going through some shit, you guys. But I also wanted to say the discussion between Andrew Garfield and the interpreter about the merits of Christianity versus the merits of Buddhism when they're in Garfield's cage is also just terrific. And I think that's the most important scene in the movie, honestly, because it kind of shows why neither one can see the other one's side. Like, they're both incredibly stubborn. And, like, the interpreter and his torturer, like, I love the kind of disaffected nature of that character. Because he's always insisting that, like, the renouncing of God is, like, just a formality. You can believe whatever the hell you want. I don't really care. Just step on the fucking... just step on the plaque.
Icon.
Yeah, yeah. Step on the plaque. And he's very much a guy who's just doing his job. And even, like, the Inquisitor and the other higher-ups, they don't really seem to care that much about what he believes. Like, they're...
Right.
They have outlawed Christianity, and they don't want it around. But, like, they don't really, like... They don't seem to have... It doesn't seem like it offends them morally or anything. Or anything like that. They just don't... Like, I feel like they were just kind of set in their ways, and they just decided, no, we don't want this. And yeah, they're torturing people because of it, and it's terrifying.
Yeah. It's interesting that like what you talked about, how Martin Scorsese seems to always be making movies that are about the society that the time the movies are made. And it is a treatise on faith and, you know, mankind and all that. It is very much about, like, the danger of bureaucracy and, like, just going through the motions and how, like, I'm just following orders and the evil that can come out of that mentality. It's some intense shit.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I also want to talk about Liam Neeson's return to the movie. He is there for the first 5 minutes. He's this very powerful, like, kind of opening voiceover. And then the rest of the movie kicks off where Garfield and Driver go out to find him. And then he disappears for 2 hours. They don't find him. And then suddenly he returns as Father Ferreira around the 2 hour mark. And I think his meeting scene with Garfield when they meet for the first time is a highlight of the movie as well. And that's, like, a really intense thing where Garfield kind of sees how far gone Liam Neeson's character has been. Like, he had basically gone through exactly what Andrew Garfield's going through now and how he eventually apostatized. And it's been so long since we've seen Liam Neeson in a real drama. It's easy to forget how good he can be as a dramatic actor.
When he's not trying to rescue his kidnapped daughter.
Yeah, or, like, pretend to be a Lego minifigure. I don't know why that was the first thing I thought of, but that is the first thing I thought of.
Beautiful.
So I thought that was really fantastic and really great. Also, the scene in which Adam Driver drowns trying to save the villagers who would not renounce God. That was intense. Like, there's so much stuff in this movie just, like, brutalized my soul, man. It was
tough. I did really appreciate how much of the film is kind of reflects the novel, like, or not that I've read the book, but it reflects that it is a novel where it starts with this narration from Liam Neeson and what his character is going through at that point. And then we get Andrew Garfield as we enter the second half of the movie, gives us narration. And then at the end, we get the narration from the Dutch trader, and it reflects kind of chapters throughout the story. I thought that was a really interesting way.
Yeah, that's it. That's interesting.
To put that together to show time jumps and to string this long narrative all the way through. I just thought that was an interesting tactic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also want to talk about all of the torture scenes because they were excruciating and I needed somebody to hold me while I was watching them. In this movie, you see people being burned alive. You see them drowned. You see them crucified in the ocean. There is the sudden burst of violence in which a man is decapitated in front of Andrew Garfield, which is, like, so sudden and, like, intense and, like, crazy and horrifying. And then there's the ending. There's the ending of the movie in which Garfield publicly renounces God. He apostatizes following in Father Ferreira's footsteps by stepping on the image of Christ in order to stop the suffering of 5 people who are hanging upside down in a pit. And he ends up living his life much like Liam Neeson's character, Father Ferreira, in Japan. And his religious background just seems like systematically taken away from him throughout his life.
Weaponized against his very belief. They force him and Liam Neeson's character to examine incoming trade goods for symbols of Christianity and religious iconography. They make their religious background be used against the thing they had it for.
Exactly, yeah. And then, we hear that he's never been seen praying. He takes a Japanese wife, so he's not celibate anymore. But then when he dies... We see that the cross he received in the movie's beginning is held very tightly in his hands, in his corpse. I that was just a very powerful image to end the movie on. After all that time and after all that suffering, he still never gave up the faith.
Right.
And even for someone like me who's not especially religious, I found that incredibly powerful, to believe in something that much that after everything he had been through and seen, he still has that. That's a really strong ending to this movie, and I think a really powerful message for the world going forward. In any case, Silence is a powerful movie that I doubt enough people will see, but I hope it finds an audience. It's a very tough watch, and it's one that I will likely not watch again for a very long time, but it's one that I think will stay with me for a very long time as well. So yeah. There's that.
Yeah, it's definitely the type of movie that I probably see once or twice in your life, but you won't forget it, I don't think.
Yeah, exactly. So is there any other spoilery things you want to talk about Silence, or do you think we're good to go?
I think we're good. The brutality of the just the whole movie, really. Specifically the scene that stuck out to me the most was the ocean crucifixion sequence.
Yeah.
Where they're crucified at low tide and forced to, drown during high tide. I don't know. That was just the sequence that hit me the hardest, I think.
Yeah, that was a brutal, brutal scene. And on that happy note, Mike,
yeah.
Where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. We promise most of them aren't this depressing. Thank you so much for listening to Film Book Cast. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike's pre-show. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us in 2 weeks. We're going to be discussing a movie that will be basically a complete 180 from Silence. We're going to decide what that movie is right now. Put Mike on the spot. Where we're going to be either discussing the new M. Night Shyamalan horror film Split, which I'm pretty excited about, or the much-discussed return of Vin Diesel to the XXX franchise in XXX, The Return of Xander Cage. Mike, of those movies...
I wanted to do both. This is hard.
That's the thing. So I think... I think if we can see both, we'll do a double feature. But if not, What do you want to see? Pick one that we can
We'll prioritize.
Yeah.
XXX Return of Xander Cage.
You're prioritizing? Really? Okay.
Yeah. Just because I think it'll be just batshit insane.
Okay, that's fair. I was kind of hoping you prioritize Split, but that's fine. That's what I get for putting you on the spot.
Yeah, our last foray into M. Night Shyamalan didn't work out so great for me.
For you.
For me.
I still insist that the visit was pretty good. Anyway. And I've actually heard very good things about Split. It's even better than the visit. So.
Oh, great.
But also that James McAvoy is a great performance. And supposedly the twist, because it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, so it has to have one.
Yeah.
Supposedly it is insane. One of the best. I've heard some people say it's one of the best twist endings to a movie ever.
Wow. That's a bold statement.
That is a very bold statement.
Okay. All right.
But we'll figure it out as we get there. So either Split or XXX or both. Hopefully both. I think we can do it.
We'll save our double feature for episode 51.
Exactly. That seems wrong somehow. And then you can check out our next Complete Works, which we'll be doing this week as well. We'll finally be talking about Nicolas Cage's role in Brian De Palma's Snake Eyes. I feel like I've been saying that for weeks.
It's probably because you have.
And that's because I have. It's been a little while since I've done a Complete Work, so I'm excited to finally get back into the cage. But thank you so much for listening, guys. We are out.